You are listening to Agency Work, the podcast that provides career advice for people who want to work at a creative agency. I am your host, Parker Playstead. Today I'm talking with Elias Dancy from Flatland Creative. Elias is the founder, creative director, and lead animator at Flatland Creative. He leads a team of animators and graphic designers and video production work for corporate clients and advertising agencies. Elias has a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree in Communication Arts and Design from Virginia Commonwealth University, also known as VCU here in Richmond. Elias, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So I'd like to start off talking about your education, classes you had in college, projects you had that contributed to the skills and knowledge that you have now that you use in your work in animation.
Right, yeah. So I think nowadays you can learn technical skills, animation, software, very easily online. And there's a billion ways to do that. When I was younger, in the 90s, and was trying to do any animation at all, it was impossible. You could draw flip books in the side of a book or notebook or sketchbook and just kind of flip it, but to really see animation work was an impossibility. So just getting access to video editing equipment where you could splice a frame of film. You know, that rarely does anybody shoot film anymore. But when I was younger, you were shooting VHS tape. And in order to do animation, if you were to stop the tape and start the tape up again, every time you stopped the tape, it would stop and it would rewind a little bit. And then you push record again, it would wait a second or two before it would start recording. So there was zero way for you to get frame-by-frame animation tested. It was hard if you were shooting video to even get an edit point where you wanted it to be.
Right.
So going to VCU, just getting access to real film cameras, film equipment, film animation stand where you could photograph your drawings one frame at a time was huge to be able to see if your animation was really holding up and was coming alive when it was run at film speed.
Right, yeah.
And so that was huge, just plain access to the equipment, which nowadays, I mean, so fortunate, everybody with an inexpensive laptop and whatever Adobe is, what, like $30 a month or something like that, can animate full color animation and play it back the moment they draw it. You know, we had to buy film, you had to do the drawings, you had to schedule a time to photograph it, you had to ship the film off, wait a week for it to come back in. wait for your class to come, string the film up on a projector and then project it on the wall. And if you wanted to watch it later, you had to have a camcorder to videotape the projection of the film off the wall so that you could play it at home on a VHS.
Right.
Player.
Yeah, very slow process, meticulous, tedious process. But what you got out of that was the planning skills that you have now, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you have that kind of limitation, every second that you are allowed in an editing bay or at the film stand is precious time. And film was expensive, so film itself. Well, I did live-action filmmaking as well in college, and burning that film and looking at how much stock you had left that you had to be able to shoot was a huge issue, because buying an extra roll of film and paying for the processing of that too was huge. So you were planning your shots and how many takes you had. You couldn't just run footage.
Right.
So everything was planned. And same thing with animation. When you're drawing it on paper and flipping back and forth and never really seeing what it looks like at film speed until you schedule the time to be in the studio and photograph it and then wait to see it. You got one shot to do it. So you plan everything out from the shots that you want to make sure that the story makes sense to how to bring a character alive. And you spent time thinking about it and imagining it before you sat down and drew it and wasted time shooting it and photographing it and sending the film off. And for live action filmmaking, those skills came in as well. I mean, there was one Avid, and we were shooting film, so it was precious, and there was one Avid for all the students to use. So I would go to classes during the day, and then I would always take the shift in the wee mornings of the hours, because we would run that Avid around the clock.
Right.
Students would come in around the clock. So I would always schedule to come in at midnight to 3 o'clock, because I could count on 3 o'clock. Person who scheduled 3 to 6, he's not showing up. So then I could edit from 12 until 6, 7 in the morning until whoever showed up for their morning shift. Sometimes they wouldn't get there until 9 a.m. and I'd have a nice 9-hour editing
Smart move.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's great background insight on how you developed your planning skills and how things these days are in some ways too easy to to map out and iterate and just implement and sketch. But let's shift over to influences and style. So were there any projects you worked on that helped influence your style? Because you do a lot of cartoon animation. So in terms of developing the style and your kind of career path around that, or projects or artistic influences or professors, any background on that?
Well, I mean, for going back to my own personal interests or whatever, there's always been kind of a heavy Disney-esque style to the way that I naturally draw. But I had a strong interest in other more American Western-style animations, like anything from Looney Tunes and Disney definitely plays my default drawing style. Ren and Stimpy was huge when I was in high school.
Right.
And most people, when you say Ren and Stimpy, think of the really terrible, hideous, close-up illustration work. Yeah. But I like the ability to – in Ren and Stimpy, what has still affected my studio today is you have your characters. You have something that defines who they are and what they are. There's a structure to drawing the character. But I don't necessarily force every animator to – only use that rig, and this is the exact way you draw the character. In Ren and Stimpy, you had what made Ren Ren, and you had what made Stimpy Stimpy, but they'd be drawn slightly off model all the time, and the animator that worked on that scene had their artistic stamp on that scene and how they drew those expressions. It wasn't like in the real Ghostbusters, Egon had the 10 expressions he would make, you know, right. And it was just mix and match and pick that expression. In Ren and Stimpy, there was this exploration of what the characters were capable of doing and acting that I thought was really great. And
some more latitude there in the range of expressions and the art. Okay.
And I always liked short form stuff, and even, I work in advertising now. I always kind of lean that direction. When I was a child in like fourth grade on the safety patrol, I was on one of the people on safety patrol leading the kids to the class, to the school. And when I was in fourth grade, the boom of the California Raisins hit, Claymation.
Right.
A huge, ad campaign, and Hardee's ran a big campaign where you get the toys from Hardee's or whatever. And I would be outside standing at the school waiting for the kids to arrive doing the California Raisin dance just because I gravitated to that really short form, really appealing thing that could hook people's attention. And that's – we do a lot of motion graphics and video post-production and a range of animation from interactive to graphic design and typography. But the character work is a niche of ours, and one of the reasons why it stands out is that magic of a character coming alive in that really short period of time that can grab people and connect to people. And a lot of our other projects, I mean, we've done websites before, and with a website, it's, oh, wow, it looks great, and it finally works, which is good. That's good. That's a good congratulations at the end. But when somebody has an idea for a character that doesn't exist yet even, and you're plucking it out of their imagination and it's coming alive, I mean, there's no better way to make a client happy. I mean, we've had people applaud and cheer on the phone when they see the finished piece.
That's great. Yeah.
So
that's the result you want.
Yes.
So let's talk about your early career out of VCU. It came out of school. And you worked for a digital media company as your day job, and you were freelancing, doing animation work on the side, building your portfolio, building the work that you could show people. But you had an interesting experience working at that digital media company that helped you see the bigger picture of business.
Yeah, so doing very corporate things. I mean, my first two jobs, one was labeling medical illustrations, and the other one was graphic design and interactive. And it was always they would have a sales project come in, and you need to do the marketing for it or the campaign for it. And it was just here's what they're trying to sell. Here's get their logo off their website and work your magic, make it look pretty. Right. And that was what graphic design was at that job for me for a while, was just make it look pretty. And there was a new sales team lead for the whole sales team that came in, named Don Scott, and he changed everything for me by. I was heading up all of the interactive campaigns for that company, and he invited me to the sales meetings every Monday. And so now, instead of just kind of being handed a company name and a headline and just trying to make it look pretty,
right,
or make it match what their website looked like, or find a photo to stick on it or whatever. I was hearing from the sales team what the goals were, what the issues with the client was, what the client wanted out of the project. They weren't really effectively communicating that to me on their own, but being in the sales meetings every single Monday and really knowing what this other department of the company was doing and was after.
Right.
I mean, not only did it change what I was doing for them, how I was assisting them reach their goals and their clients reach their goals, but was hearing all sorts of it. They had sales presentations coming up, and instead of just a typical PowerPoint, I would put together materials to help them win larger projects when they needed to paint the picture better. And it wasn't just making it look pretty. It was more effective communication and painting the picture for the client of what they were going to get out of the campaign.
Right.
And so suddenly I started seeing the divisions in the company differently. Here I was in graphic design at a lot of places can kind of be considered the small – I was probably the lowest salary,
right,
there and the
right
afterthought. We've got the client. We've got this. They want to capture the leads. Get them to design it now. But each of those other departments were stuck to themselves. The salespeople dealt with sales, and the programmers were just waiting to see what they needed to program. And the national people were just worried about, you know, marketing the national websites or whatever. But I started seeing over the walls of those departments and could see what each of their concerns were, or what they needed, or how to instruct them onto getting the best project, and kind of became the glue between all of those different goals. And I think that really helped me when I went out and started running a small business where,
right,
I wasn't just trying to do my craft. I wasn't just a designer for people. I kind of understood how that plugged into the goals of their whole company and their other departments. You know, if I'm dealing with another owner of a company, I might know a little bit more about what their concerns are than if a programmer comes to me and says, we need a piece of interactive. I kind of know what they're looking for out of that, or what,
right,
or maybe what they're not thinking of, because I'm used to dealing with people that are not also other designers in a company.
So, very well said. I mean, I want people to reflect on what you just said, because it's going beyond the task of graphic design and understanding how that is being used by the client and the goals of the client, and getting the feedback as to what you did and produced and delivered, did that achieve the goals of the salespeople and the client? And you're getting that feedback through this interaction. So it really expanded your understanding of what it is you're doing and why you're doing it. Fair to say.
Oh yeah, and we did research into it too. The same guy, Don Scott, had purchased research on what actually led to better results, and implementing that for the first time. I mean, the programmers had their system of what they built stuff on, and I could easily just make it look pretty and hand it off to them.
Right.
But learning what the salespeople and their clients really needed and designing for that, I mean, it changed everything, because we used to just, if results kind of tapered off, we would just refresh it. Do another pretty picture, and then you'll get another flood of people
another
signing
boost.
Up or,
yeah,
or clicking. And when we started doing the research and looking at what the goals were, I wasn't just handing a design off to the programming team anymore. I was actually kind of instructing – I was the low man on the totem pole, but the design that I give them, that's what they program. So in a way, I was telling them what to do. I was their boss in a way. So I kind of looked at it and said, well, how do we actually get the results we want? And I would design something, and I would go to the programming team and say, I know it works this way, but can we get it to do this instead? Can,
right,
can we get these questions on the second page? So we've already captured the lead that the client needs, that the salesperson needs. We've achieved that, and all this extra stuff, can we put it on a second page to capture the data there? And they would rebuild the tool to kind of do that after some pushback or whatever. But we were able to take form completion rates from like, you were lucky to get 5% or something, and we moved one very soft ask, granted, but it moved from like a 10% completion rate to almost 50% completion rate.
That's fantastic.
And some other ones up to like 30% or something. And,
right,
and instead of tapering off after a month, they would stay there. But it was from this knowledge of what these different departments needed, instead of just pushing something along through the,
right,
pretty, the pretty picture process.
Right. So this has been an important segment of this interview. I want people to reflect on it again. But I've got to move on to some more topics here with Elias. So the next topic is, as you were doing the day job and you learned what you learned from that, you were doing your own side gig stuff and producing content and getting it out there And that led to you eventually being able to go on your own and have your own business. But the challenging stage for freelancers is, how do I get people to see what I'm doing? You know, somebody can be doing great work, but if nobody sees it, you're going nowhere. So could you talk a little bit about how you started getting your side gig stuff seen?
Yeah, I'll try to address it a little. I mean, it was a different world back yeah. In, you know, I graduated in 99, so early 2000s, and everything, you know, a lot of the internet stuff was
early,
changing,
yeah.
And it was early on. But certainly getting yourself seen by anybody is the big trick. Nowadays, you can get a lot of people to see your work, but how do you get the right people to see it? So from the very beginning, I guess it probably helped that my very first job, I was just labeling medical illustrations, that I sought something else to do. So strangely enough, one of my first two freelance gigs were with the Martin Agency. So one was for 64 Magazine, which was an art magazine at the time that came out. It's kind of pro bono work from the Martin Agency. And they just went around to a bunch of artists. They were just looking for artists to feature. That's how they would advertise that magazine, wasn't to make an ad campaign, but just center their ad campaign around just showing a piece of art. So all their billboards were just paintings that people had done or photographs people had taken and then tagged with the 64 Magazine. So when I was a student and showed some animation and some films at a film festival that was around, it was called Flickr, where they would show, you know, independent films, I guess they had gotten in touch with the guy who was running that film festival, which I not only knew from putting my work into the film festival, but I worked at media support at VCU. So when he was first putting his film festival together, I was the one checking equipment out to him and helping him technically get his film festival off the ground. But they asked him about it, and he led them to me, and they came to me to feature some animation in this ad campaign. And I didn't really have anything that was 30 seconds long. I had like test animation. It was all in the 90s. Again, it was film stuff, so it was all pencil test animation. But Photoshop and Flash and all this digital stuff was coming about. So I did a whole new piece for them based on nursery rhymes that would get misconnected by the end and get twisted around, and it was just made a 30-second spot of I loved nursery rhymes when I was a kid, and so I just kind of made this new piece for them for 64 Magazine, and it was for low pay or maybe even donated or whatever, but it was for the Martin Agency for that piece. They came back to me a while later when I was looking for work, and this is an interesting thing how the industry has changed. I actually applied for a job back when they had Martin Digital first, and it kind of disappeared for a while, and then paint came back later, like a decade later or so. But I had applied for the job there, and they didn't like at the time, they separated a programming person who could program the interactive from somebody who did the art. And I went in, and they liked my art, and we talked, got along with everybody. But they didn't like that I programmed too, so I didn't get the job.
You had too many skills.
Yeah, they were like, yeah, we just need you to be the artist, and we have a programming team for that, really. And then the very next week, they called me and said, we've got this interactive piece that we need, and we could hire a freelance programmer and a freelance designer, but we know that we could just hire you and you could do both.
Perfect.
So for freelance, it made sense that I could do both.
Right.
And now everybody's expected to kind of do a little bit of both. But at the time, that gave me a first freelance job, and it was for the Martin Agency themselves. It was on their website. So I was fresh out of school, less than a year out of school. And my freelance job with the Martin Agency was to caricature the 10 partners of the Martin Agency into really ridiculous superhero Mortal Kombat style outfits, playing ping pong games with like Mortal Kombat special moves, basically mocking their 10 partners because you're doing caricatures and making them look silly and throwing bombs at each other and everything. And it was on the Martin Agency website.
Wow. Wow, but that's a cool gig.
Yeah, but for seeing my work, I mean, the biggest way that I got a lot of freelance clients initially, and I ended up having regulars very quickly, was there was popular message boards at the time. One of the most popular ones for illustration, character, cartoon work was Shane Gline's forums, and you could post caricatures and cartoon drawings and all this stuff, and there were fantastic professional Hollywood people posting on there. I mean, it was phenomenal. The participation and the quality of the work on there was amazing. And I just started posting some of my stuff there, and I was by far not the most talented artist on there, but I guess it stood out in a certain way. And within a month, I just came up with a goal of post a drawing a day on this message board forum and just see what people say or just the self-discipline to finish an illustration each day to post on there. And they were just drawings of cartoon people. And within a month, somebody contacted me and said, oh, your work really stands out. Have you ever animated before? And I was like, animation is what I do. That's what I want to do. And right. so I had that client for probably about 5 or 6 years after that, doing web cartoons and illustration work and other things that he needed just off of seeing my work on a message board for him. Nowadays, you've got Instagram. You have right. Instagram and other social media networks to get your work out there. The problem is there's a vast sea of constant illustration work, cartoon work, design work that people can see. So right. the trick now probably is to stand out amongst all that rather than being seen. How do you get noticed is different.
So we've talked about this where being noticed and the kind of work that people are putting out there you've had people present work to you that's been somewhat unfinished. And your reaction to that has been, look, if you want to take my time and have me look at what you're doing, finish it. Don't show me unfinished work. Really show off your full skill set by finishing it. Don't show a half-baked thing that really doesn't show what you can do for me. Why do you want to take up my time with this? So talk a little bit about, the emphasis on making sure you take it all the way to the end before you put it out there to show people, because you want to showcase what you're capable of doing in the end, not just your ideas or your art style. It's the finished work that you really want to showcase.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're going to go and show your work to a place, look at the kind of work that they do. And if your work doesn't match, I mean, is it better than what they're doing? Does it add something to it? Or is it just completely not what they do at all? And is it at the level that they do it at? If you're seeing that we have full color 30-second to 2-minute spots on our website, mainstream advertising or corporate storytelling, and you're going to send me, a 5-minute loosely storyboarded, non-animated, sketched out anime science fiction piece that has nothing to do with this at all, at least finish it or something. Like, show me something that I can use. I can't make any use of that. And again, when I was younger, just getting access to the equipment to test, can I bring something alive in sketch form? Because you wanted to do color animation when I was younger, you had to not only sketch it and make sure it works, you had to then ink it on acetate, flip it over and paint the other side of it, and then photograph it on film again. You don't have to do that now.
Right.
You can do color animation very, very quickly, full color. Do a really, really great, fully finished piece that is short. Don't think that longer is better and it's all half-baked and unfinished and you're sending this to me. And I'm pretty hard on that because when we get projects in, it's for advertising and it moves really fast. We have projects sometimes that, we're lucky to get a month to do anything from a 30-second to a 2-minute piece in. We did a 30-second piece for the Super Bowl that we had 4 weeks to do it in, and it was 24 frames per second character animation with numerous characters and painted backgrounds, and we had 4 weeks to do it in. Most of our projects we might have 2 weeks to do it in. The third Pop-Tarts piece that we did was over 2 minutes of animation, and we did it in 7 days. So if you're approaching me for work and really want to get involved in this industry and you don't have any piece that's finished, and we move at a very fast speed, and there's right. zero excuse to not have one finished piece of high quality to show me.
Right. And so there's static graphic design, and then there's full animation. Mm-hmm. So when somebody's presenting to you, is a completely finished static design sufficient, or does it really need to be animated?
It can depend what we're looking for. I mean, if we're going to work for somebody on a regular basis, having a design skills but also being able to animate them is very important for what we typically do. If all you want to do is animate and you don't want to design anything, that's also very tricky. We're not large enough where we've got multiple departments where you can just do one piece of it. It's great if you've got some skills in typography and design and some illustration, but then can also animate it. Or if you're young and you're new to that and you don't have a whole lot of animation experience, can you thoroughly engage with learning that and pick it up? Are you a fast learner and will explore that and not settle for what a software package is going to give you right out of the box? Because the biggest challenge I think students today and other people trying to get in the industry today have is it's very, very, very easy to do work that's good enough, that's pretty good.
Right.
Well, again, that's why half-baked work coming to me, I just don't understand it, because it is super easy to get pretty good work done now. What's hard is making it great, taking it to that next level, putting in the long extra little bit of work. You can create great design and animate it very easily with After Effects and plugins, and there's all sorts of stuff that is perfectly acceptable professional work.
Right.
But it's also very accessible to everybody else. That's one reason why we do frame by frame, 24 frames per second work whenever we can, is just the time it takes to do that is something a lot of people aren't willing to do, and it's a different skill set than a lot of people have.
Right.
But if you think good is good enough, the 10 people standing next to you can hit that bar,
right?
At, you know, like that.
Well, I want to shift a little bit on this, where you did some work for me that really impressed me, and what I found most impressive about it, other than your animation skills and your graphic design skills, was your storyboarding skills. And I was working on this project, and I'd gone through probably two or three storyboards trying to figure this thing out, and it wasn't coming together. And I met up with you, and we talked about it in your office, and I felt that you got where I was going with this, and it was a very collaborative conversation. And then in your head, I mean, this wasn't necessarily the traditional storyboard written out, but in your head, you figured it out and mapped this whole thing out. And in the conversation, you could articulate back to me the storyboard. Then as I tossed in some ideas of having some real video and then tying in the animated illustration to fill in some gaps where I couldn't shoot this at the scale I wanted to do it with real video, go to animated illustration and then come out back out to live video. And we went out, we shot the live video, you art directed it on the set, you brought in the video team and gave clear direction to them, and we shot it very cleanly and quickly in one day. And then they delivered their video to you. You put it together. You added your animated illustration in the middle. You did these really cool transitions that made it look smooth and made it look it was no awkwardness to it. I don't think – I can't come up with the right word. But there was no awkwardness to how the transitions worked out. And I really marveled at how good you were at seeing all of this. And in our conversation about it later, the aha moment for me was, oh, yeah, this is kind of like – and I brought up the example of Pixar movies. And at the end of a Pixar movie, you'll have the outtakes. Well, there are no outtakes at a Pixar movie. It's all frame-by-frame animation. There's no outtakes. So everything is planned frame-by-frame or scene-by-scene, however you want to look at it. And – your skill at that, because you're an animated illustrator, and going back to your the older techniques in college days and your planning skills of planning it out, seeing it all, was phenomenal for me. So where I'm going with this is if you're working with animated illustrators, they're great storyboard artists. Really, that skill came through very clearly, your ability to storyboard the story and see it all very efficiently and put it all together. So I know I've been droning on about this, but I'd like to hear you talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of animation sits in between a lot of other skill sets or design or artistic areas that sometimes don't come in contact with each other. You will have design people that don't have much use for interactive, or maybe they do, or illustrators that only illustrate and they don't really deal with typography or graphic design. And filmmakers, video people, you know, they're great at videos and they shoot them in a certain way, but they might not deal with, again, typography or design or illustration work. But all from interactive to design to illustration to typography to live action, all of this can involve animation. So it sits between a lot of these other skill sets. And certainly with animation, you can specialize in one of these things or the other. But I've always kind of dabbled or touched in a lot of these different areas. So I think that really helps. When I was in film school, we wrote our own scripts and shot our own films. And everyone else there was a filmmaker. So their scripts would be dialogue driven. And mine would be telling the story visually, and then dialogue would either be a silent film with music, or dialogue would be an extra layer on top of that. But the storytelling was always purely visual because I was a visual person who could who drew and thought about animation. With live action video, oftentimes you shoot a bunch of material and you edit it down and you shoot for coverage. Again, with video, it's easy to shoot for coverage. With film, it's a lot more expensive to shoot for coverage. When I was younger, one of the big heroes of independent filmmaking was Robert Rodriguez, who also was an animator and an illustrator. And he said, you know, just picture the movie in your head and then go get just those shots. And it's already edited, basically. Right. You know, just get those shots that you see. And oftentimes video is shot with massive amounts of coverage, and then you whittle it down and create the scene after the fact instead of picturing it beforehand. The way I oftentimes word it, I don't know if this makes sense, but video is subtractive. You have all this stuff and you subtract it down, where you can't do that with animation. You don't have a bunch of material and you subtract. Animation is additive. You have to – anything that you want, any second of animation that's going to exist, all of that has to be built around it. So you plan your edit beforehand. With film, you edit afterwards.
Right.
With animation, you edit beforehand, and that edit is called storyboard. So you're visually seeing the final edit when you storyboard it, and animators – have to visualize that. You're not looking at 10 shots and then picking how they fit together with other material and finding the edit after the fact. You're thinking about it and then choosing how you're going to tell this story in the best way before you animate it. And then animation is just completing it. Another great reference for film on that, of course, is Alfred Hitchcock, who would storyboard his films and then say they were done. Now they just have to go shoot them.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of how we work, is visual communications and storytelling, and how if an animated film should be able to work completely silently. So talking about influences, one of my other favorite ones is Triplets of Belleville, which is a French film, but you don't need to speak French to watch it, and you don't need subtitles because it's basically a silent film with music, and the storytelling is 100% visual all the way through, and it's feature length, and it's riveting and compelling and absolutely beautiful animation. But it's visual communication. It happens to be a story for entertainment in that case. But in order to show how a product is installed, which is what we were doing for you,
right.
Or whatever the communication might be, animation has a great way of telling this. If you engage with it and really think about how to solve this communication issue for a client, it can make very complex stuff simple. You can get rid of all the other visual noise and just, you know, in your case, we were showing how to install something. So with live action, you might have all this other stuff of reality around it, whereas in animation, you can kind of get rid of all of that and just show the piece that's being installed and have it appear and rotate around it and show exactly what needed to be seen at the right time and the right moment.
It was great. I mean, it was absolutely perfect result for what I needed. Everybody at the company loved it. Everybody was very impressed. Well, Elias, I wish I had more time to go into more details. I think we've gotten a lot of great stuff out of you today, but I've got to wrap this thing up because we're coming to the end of our time.
Can I say one other? You
yes,
wanted to talk to
yes,
students or other people looking to get in?
Yes.
I touched before. It's easy to be good, but I would add to that. If somebody's coming to you or you're approaching somebody else for a job, being able to do a good job at that job is expected. If people hire us to do animation, doing a good piece of animation shouldn't be something I have to win them over for. If they're coming to us for animation, being good at animation should be already expected.
Right.
What your job really is, and this goes for any industry, but certainly for ours as well, is do the good job, but also be easy to work with, and also remove headaches. That you had a headache.
Yeah.
I solved it with visual communications
and
the animation. You wanted it to be a certain quality, and that was expected. But we also helped you remove the headache. We didn't cause you a headache.
Right.
And there are a lot of people that they make you jump through hoops or I'm paying you money to do the animation, and I'm jumping through hoops for you?
Right.
It's like my job is to remove headaches from my client. They're expecting good animation. They're expecting it to be great. They see my portfolio. If you want to work with somebody, don't cause them headaches. Remove headaches. Be easy to work with. Be accommodating. Don't throw a bunch of homework into their lap. Take on whatever you can to solve the problem for them, and you'll get work and you'll get hired because
you're solving problems.
Nobody wants to keep that headache. And if
you
can remove that headache, you know, the way we do it is partly by doing great animation work, but it's also making that experience fun. Most of our clients I don't know, I don't, whatever regular people do, you know, they're dealing with numbers or personnel problems, or they're doing this, and then they come down and work with us and they see a character come alive. And so we're the fun part of our client's day or their month even.
Absolutely.
And if you can remove a headache from somebody, they're going to want to work with you. They're going to ask to work with you. You're not going to have to win them over and keep showing them design work. They're going to expect it. They're going to know it. They're already seen it. Give them something fun. And give them zero headaches. If they have a headache, find out how you can be the person who removes that headache.
Yeah. Well, that's absolutely true. And my experience working with you was fantastic. I enjoyed our conversations and you took care of what I needed done. And it was a very positive experience. Well, Elias, thank you for your time today. I appreciate you sharing your insights with us. Now it's time to wrap this up. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. You have been listening to the Agency Work Podcast. My guest today has been Elias Dancy from Flatland Creative. We have been talking about his background and work in animated video graphics. To learn more about Elias and his agency, go online to studioflatland.com. He's got some great stuff up there. Thank you, Elias. And to our audience, thank you for listening. I will be back next week with a new guest, and I hope you will tune into that episode. This podcast was recorded at Red Amp Audio in Richmond, Virginia. This is Agency Work signing off.